All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Torah Studies. This is our weekly journey into the soul of the Torah portion. Today, we have what I'm calling, this is going to be a prediction, bold call, called shot, Babe Ruth style. You with me on this? It's a called shot. In other words, we're calling it before it happened. This is an epic class. Okay? You guys ready for this? Subject is the Kabbalah of Hair. Or subtitled, Hair Today, Gone Tomorrow. Hair Today, Gone Tomorrow. Now, let's discuss what's going on. Let's figure out what this topic is about. So the topic is to understand what is the spiritual significance of hair. What is the spiritual significance of a haircut? What is the Jewish way to get a haircut? And where does the tradition to cut a boy's hair for the first time at 3 years old, where does that tradition come from? You guys all familiar with that tradition? Mm-hmm. The upshernish, yes. Cutting it at three, you let it grow, and then at three. I can't tell you how many times I was asked for my boys, oh, what's her name? Yeah, when they're, you know, 1.5, 2, 2.5, 2 3/4, 2 7/8, right? You go shopping, you get to the checkout. Oh, what's her name? Does she want a lollipop? It's like, well, about that. He's actually a boy and we don't want an identity crisis. Anyway.
Yeah, gender.
Well, so the bottom line is this. There's a lot to talk about when it comes to the topic of hair. There are a just incredible number of Jewish teachings on the significance of hair, and we are going to cover a bunch of them today. So let's begin by exploring the origins of the Jewish tradition to cut hair for the first time for a boy at age 3. Where does this come from? Anybody familiar? Where does it come from? Supercuts. No. Supercuts would probably say they would probably advocate starting from the beginning.
Okay.
What do you think?
From the tree.
Okay, good. So there's a tradition.
3 years and
so Mike. Great. So Mike is referring to the mitzvah in the Torah, where the Torah says that when you plant a fruit tree and it begins to grow, the first 3 years of its fruit, you cannot cut down the fruit, you cannot cut it, you can't eat of the fruit. After 3 years, it becomes available. So, right, since we're trying to eat our kids' hair, so we shouldn't cut it till they're 3.
Man is compared to
a tree, and therefore, like a tree, 3 years you don't touch. So too, a young boy you don't touch for 3 years. Okay, good.
It allows the tree to build up its strength, I think.
Yes. And a child like Samson grows the hair, becomes a very strong toddler, and then that's it. At this point, you're out. We're cutting your hair. Forget it. It's done. Okay, good. So that is a classic connection. We're going to go a few other directions today and explore some incredible wisdom and insight about hair. But let's talk about some of the earliest stories or origins that we have documented about the upshernish, about the haircut. So take a look at text number 5. We're going to start with text 5. We're going a little bit out of order, but don't worry, you're in good hands. There's a plan here. Text number 5, Ray, please get us started. Here we have a story about the Arizal. This comes from the writings. It's known as these are the writings of the Arizal, but he didn't write them himself. His student, Rabbi Chaim Vital, wrote them down. Take a look at text. Please read text 5.
There is a custom for Jews to travel on Lag BaOmer to the graves of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and Rabbi Elazar, his son, who are buried in the town of Meron, and to eat, drink, and celebrate there. I saw my teacher, the Ari of blessed memory, travel there once on Lag BaOmer. He and his entire household and stay there for the first 3 days of the week when he first arrived from Egypt. I do not, however, know if he had already at that time mastered the wondrous wisdom that he came to grasp afterward. Rabbi Yonatan Shagish told me that the year before, I came, the year before I came to study under him, Arizal took his young son there with his entire household and cut his son's hair according to the well-known custom in a day of feasting and rejoicing.
So here we have a reference to the notion, to the custom, number one, of going to the gravesite of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai in Meron on Lag BaOmer. So that's a very popular custom, it exists still today. But also that the Arizal, a year prior, had taken his young son, implication being his son was three, he took his young son and did the first haircut in Meron on Lag BaOmer.
Is Meron in Egypt?
No, it's in Israel. Where is it exactly?
It's close to Safat.
It's in northern northern Israel. There is a bonfire. I'm not sure if they throw it in, but there's a bonfire. Yeah, many bonfires. Now, so this is one of the earlier sources. We have another source, text number 6. We have, yeah, let's do text 6. Another early source. Julian, please take it away.
This year, I'm merited to spend Lag BaOmer at the Holy of Holies, the gravesite of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai at Meron. I saw there with my own eyes the dancing and celebration from Thursday evening until midday Friday, truly the same as the water-drawing celebration of the temple.
So imagine how much the Talmud says about that parenthetically. Someone who didn't see that joy had never seen joy in their life. So he's saying this joy was kind of like that joy, although he wasn't there, but he's like, I can imagine that this joy was on that type of level.
In the light of morning, Hasidim and men of great deeds came dressed in their Shabbat finery with their small sons and cut their hair, and honored all present with the opportunity to share a little hair from their child and bless him to grow into a Torah scholar with the fear of heaven. They provided refreshments and we blessed L'chaim to the fathers that their sons should grow to Torah and fear of heaven. The fathers then took their sons on their shoulders and danced and sang for many hours.
So here we have another reference to the first haircut happening on Lag BaOmer at the gravesite of Shimon bar Yochai in Meron, and it being a moment of great celebration and great joy. Okay, there's another text. We're not going to read it. Text number 7. It speaks again to the same theme. Okay, so we have documented, already going back several hundred years, that there is this custom to wait for the first haircut, to do it at an auspicious time around the age of 3, and to create a celebration around it. This is for a boy. The question is, where does it come from? What is it related to? So we have one idea about the fruit trees and not cutting it until age 3, and that's likened trees and people have a certain kind of connection, and therefore that might be a connection. But there's another connection that we need to talk about, and it's connected to a teaching in this week's Torah portion. So open up your Chumash, please. Torah portion this week is Shoftim, and skip all the way to 12:45 in middle of the Torah portion. This is, pretty much in the middle of the portion, chapter 18 of the book of Deuteronomy. It talks about the rights of the priests and the Levites. So as we all know, the priests and the Levites were not granted a portion, a chelek, a nachala, in the land of Israel and Eretz Yisrael. They were not given a piece of land. And it was intentional. God says, I don't want you to be busy farming or raising animals. I want you to be the spiritual leaders and teachers of the people. So therefore, no physical involvement. Don't be a people of the earth. We have other tribes for that. You should be totally focused on the spiritual stuff. But how do you eat? If you're a Kohen, where do you get food from? How do you get clothing? Where do you get stuff from? So, of course, Torah, several places in Torah, the Torah talks about the obligation for the Israelite to support the priests and the Levites. So now, Mike, please read chapter 18, verses 1 through number 5. So the first section there on 12:45, the first several bullet points until the last one. A dina monk.
But last week, didn't we learn that you have to pray, but you have to do.
Yes.
Do.
So one thing I always say, don't hold my classes against me. I don't know what you're talking about. Last week? What was last week? Who knows? So Adina Maki, here's the point. You're right. In general, so we should be working and supporting ourselves and working hard and all that stuff. You know, we should be doing that. At the same time, there was a tribe that God singles out and says, I don't want you working. I want you to be exclusively focused on the service in the temple or the tabernacle. And that will be your work. It's not like they're not working. They have another type of work. That work doesn't earn any money. But it does get money. There are resources that come for that work through the people, which is what the Torah describes. But let's understand that it's not like they were taking the easy way out and not working hard. They had incredibly difficult work. But it was work of a different type. It wasn't, you know, work on Wall Street. It was work in the Mishkan, the tabernacle, or the temple.
Did the people also plan with, clothes and shelter?
We're about to describe this.
Oh.
Okay, so let's read it. 12:45, chapter 18. Mike.
The priests who are from the tribe of Levites shall have no portion from the spoils of war, nor shall they have any inheritance from the land with the rest of the Jewish people. This applies to all the priests who are from the tribe of Levi, regardless of whether they are fit to serve in the temple or not.
In other words, you don't look and say, well, have you served in the temple today? If not, then we're not supporting you. No, that's not how it works. If you're a priest, you get these things. Continue.
Rather, the priest and Levite will eat God's fire offerings, terumah and tithes, that he bequeathed to them. But the priest will have no territorial inheritance among his brothers. God is his inheritance, as he told Aharon. These are the priest's rights from the people.
And when we say priest's rights, in other words, this is what they get from the people.
When any ox or sheep is slaughtered, the priest should be given the foreleg, the jaw with the tongue, and the instep. You should give him terumah, which is the first portion of your grain, your wine, and your oil. You should give him the first shearings of the fleece of your sheep. For God your God has chosen him out of all your tribes to stand and serve in the name of God, he and his sons, for all time.
So do you see what they're given? What are they given? They're given meat, tongue.
What do you mean?
People like tongue. Yeah, you're not a tongue fan?
No.
You're not a tongue fan?
No.
So interesting. Who's by raise of hand? This is all anonymous because the camera's pointing this way, so no one can see. But I will totally call you all out. I'm kidding, I won't.
My mother used
Who likes tongue? Raise of hand. Who likes tongue?
Well, I only like the tip.
I know some people are like, I'm not gonna eat anything that could eat me. Like if it's a tongue, like not happening. Right?
Yeah.
You're not into tongue.
No.
Yeah.
It's very good.
Yeah. Anyway, listen, everyone has different tastes. Okay, so the priest, the Kohen gets, the more you know, the Kohen gets the tongue, he gets the foreleg, the jaw, the end stomach. What's an end stomach? Who knows? But he gets the end stomach, just in case you're wondering. Who gets the end stomach? The Kohen gets the end stomach. Stop fighting over the end stomach, kids. Give it to the Kohen. Yeah.
Small intestine.
This, I don't know. I have no idea what he would use that for. Anyway, what is it?
The cow
has more than one.
Yeah.
So it's the end stomach.
Yeah.
In case you're wondering which one, it's all the way at the end. Right, right. Yeah. That's how they chew their cud, huh?
Must be good.
Anyway, the Kohen also gets grain, first portion of the grain, the wine, and the oil. Boom, the Kohen is living rich, right? So you got meat, you have grain, so you have bread or whatever it is that you're baking, you have wine, you have oil, you're living large, huh?
And you have an stomach.
And you have an head stomach to boot. Now, one second. But somebody asked about clothing. Who asked about clothing? Adina Malka is wondering, but what are they going to wear? They have the shearings, they have the wool. Done. Case solved, their mystery solved. That's it. They have food to eat. Clothing to wear.
And they need furniture.
You're right.
So, can they sell?
And vessels.
That's a really good question. Can they sell? That's a fantastic question.
Too much.
I don't remember. Can it be redeemed for its value?
And their wives.
I understand. Can they get like a Kohen card, like a credit card, like a priest card? Oh, that's great. I don't know, but we'll have to look that up.
Yeah,
we'll
have to look that up. Jewelry and earrings and cosmetics.
I'm with you.
I mean, maybe
there must be another chapter and verse that deals with the cosmetics part of it. Well, stay tuned for next week. Anyway, so all right, here's what we wanted to get to from this. The clothing comes from the shearing. You cut the hair, you cut the wool off the sheep. So we have an interesting letter from the Rebbe, and there are other sources as well, that liken the haircut to the shearing of the sheep.
Up shearing?
Kind of like that. Text number 3. Let's go back to text 3. Back in the Torah Studies textbook, Sarah, please take it away. This comes from a letter from the Lubavitcher Rebbe.
This is the day of the first shearing of your son. May the blessings of the previous Rebbe be utterly fulfilled, and you and your household raise your son to Torah, the marriage canopy, and good deeds.
It's text 3. So, the Rebbe refers to the haircut as the day of the first shearing. I'm going to tell you something obvious. They did not have a sheep as a child. So, it's good to know. When the Rebbe said it's the day of your son's first shearing, he didn't mean it literally, they're shearing your kid, right? What did he mean? He meant the upshearnish, meant the haircut. But the haircut is also likened to a first shearing. What's the connection? What's the kesher? Ma kesher? What's the connection between the two? Take a look at text number 4. Text 4 gives a little bit of a conceptual explanation. Karen.
A reason for the custom of not cutting a boy's hair until he begins to speak. The Talmud states that a father is obligated to teach his child Torah when the child begins to speak. What does he teach? The verse, the Torah was commanded to us by Moses, an inheritance for the congregation of Jacob. Thus, at the age the boy can begin to speak, he is dedicated to God in sanctity, as is written. The first shearing of your sheep give to him, just as the sheep's wool is set aside for holy purposes and given to the Kohen, so too are the children of Israel allegorically called sheep. Therefore, when a boy begins to speak and is brought into the holy world of Torah, we shear his hair and dedicate its worth to him.
Interesting, right? It's an interesting connection.
They talk long before the age of 3. Before.
Well, 3, I guess there's a certain type of educational aptitude that a child now has, a certain type of maturity and intellectual aptitude that a child has, where you can start teaching them something a little bit more. I don't know, you're not going to teach them like heavy Torah, but at least to learn some verses of Torah, they can start learning. So it's not just teaching, it's not just them speaking, but also learning first words of Torah. And the message here is that happens at the age of 3. And therefore, to kind of mark that first time, now the child has the ability to communicate, the ability to understand. So now have the child speak words of Torah. So you want to mark that occasion. It's kind of like giving the first shearing to the Kohen. It's giving those first words of the child, not the first words, but the intellectual words, to the words of Torah. Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe Marosh Kila Yaakov. So to mark that, you cut the hair like they would shear the sheep. You cut the hair, you dedicate it for tzedakah. So therefore, we have the custom that we give a haircut to the child, and the child also gives tzedakah and encourages others to give tzedakah at the occasion as well. So here it brings it together. So if you read the story, if you read the mitzvot, the obligations in Deuteronomy, in our Torah portion, Shoftim, in Deuteronomy 18, you read about the gifts that the Israelites would give to the Kohen. You're thinking, well, what's the relevance today? Like, I don't have a farm. I'm not in Israel, and you know, I don't know anyone whose name is Kohen, which is probably not true. But like, if you said that, so what? How do I keep this mitzvah? So we have a wonderful opportunity to fulfill this mitzvah by keeping the, well, not fulfilling the biblical, literal biblical mitzvah, but derived from that or inspired by that, we have the custom that lives on to this very day of cutting, of doing the first haircut for the boy at age 3.
What do you do with the hair that when you cut the hair? Is there something that you do?
So I haven't heard anything spiritually what to do with it. We usually keep a little bit of it.
Yes.
As a kind of like a keepsake.
Yes, but nothing, there's no, nothing built into.
Nothing, yeah, I mean, maybe some people, I don't know. I don't know if there's anything else to do with it other than keep it or.
If you put it outside, the birds will use it to build nests.
Huh.
To make your nests.
It's kind of like habitat for bird manity. It's not a thing. It's like, yeah.
Kosher birds.
It's a Jewish bird.
But would you do that?
And then the babies leave the nest, and the mother bird's like, "You don't write, you don't call. What is this? What is this? Call your mother."
You don't twerp anymore.
Yeah, you don't tweet. Nothing. Garnish. Unbelievable. It's so true, though. You know it's true. Anyway, it's Jewish birds. Fine. Good. So we have here one origin or one sort of, you know, not a pure origin for the Absharanish for the first haircut, but some sort of, some sort of connection. By the way, for girls, what happens for girls when they turn 3? There's also something of significance that happens when they turn 3.
It's not restricted to 1 year.
I know they speak, but still, I think the idea of education, you're not going to do heavy education. 3 is like it's a good time to begin, you know, teaching things for a young child. Candles, yeah. So there's a custom that when a girl turns 3, so she begins lighting Shabbat candles. It's a beautiful custom. So the boys get the haircut. The girls maybe don't get a haircut, but they get to light Shabbat candles with their, you know, with
the mom. Is it sort of a bit dangerous? They could burn themselves.
Well, no. We don't give them. They with very careful assistance. Yeah. Safety first. It's not like, hey, take the torch and call me tomorrow. No. It's definitely with supervision and hand holding, and maybe at first the child just holds the mother's hand, but they're at least part of the mitzvah. So, I mean, I don't have personal experience yet because Reva's only 2.5. I just realized that she's almost 3. I mean, I kind of knew that, but I just kind of put that together.
She's going to say, no, I'll do it.
She's ready for it. Yeah, my daughter, she's so ready for that.
Because the older ones tease the younger ones. They grow up so
in general, she's like, she's doing her thing. Okay, so let's talk about another message of the Absharanish. Here we have another letter from the Rebbe, text number 8. This is the standard text of the letter that the Rebbe would send upon being notified by someone that their child was having their Absharanish. I'll say that again, but maybe simpler, with less wordy sentences. So the way it would work is people, Chassidim and others, would send in notifications, invitations to the Rebbe in Brooklyn, New York, notifying the Rebbe about happy occasions, about births of children, upsharnish haircuts, bar mitzvahs, bat mitzvahs, weddings, you know, invitation. Not like you expected the Rebbe, oh, wait a second. Solish's bar mitzvah in Pittsburgh, that's it. Folks, watch the show, I'm out of here. I mean, it's not like that was a thing that was going to happen, but the point is that you're sharing the good news and the milestone and the with the Rebbe, and the hope is to get a blessing from the Rebbe in return on that special occasion. So when people would notify the Rebbe, invite the Rebbe to the upsharing of their child, the Rebbe would send back a letter. And there was a standard text for the letter. Sometimes the Rebbe would change it up a little bit or tell the secretary to add a line, or maybe the Rebbe would hand write a line. That's a very special thing. The Rebbe would always sign all the letters himself, but there was pretty much a standard form letter for the Absharanish, as well as the other life cycles. So text 8 is the standard letter that was sent. Steve, please read text number 8.
Greetings and blessings. In response to the notification of your son's upcoming 3rd birthday, am attaching an excerpt from a letter from my revered father-in-law and teacher, the Rebbe, with regard to the Jewish custom. May it be God's will that you and your wife raise him and enable him to attain Torah, marriage, and good deeds amidst prosperity.
So let me just explain. So the Rebbe, that's the Rebbe's letter. Well, I mean, the rest is also, but that's the Rebbe's opening. And what he's saying is, Mazel Tov, congratulations, lots of blessings. And here is a blessing from my father-in-law relating to this occasion. And here's the letter within the letter.
This is the quote from my revered father-in-law and teacher, the Rebbe. With regard to a child's first haircut, the Upsharonish, it is a matter of great significance among the customs of the Jewish people. The idea behind it is to train the child to leave peyot side locks. From the day of the haircut, when the peyot are left, it is customary to carefully train the child to wear a talit katan and to recite the morning blessing, the grace after meals, and the Shabbat before retiring. May God assist you to raise your child, enable him to attain Torah, marriage, and good deeds amidst abundance of sustenance and peace of mind of both material and spiritual matters.
So the relevant text that we'll talk about right now is where the previous Rebbe, quoted in the Rebbe's letter, is saying that what is the significance of the Upsharonish? That you're cutting the hair, but leaving the peyos, the peyot. That's the side locks. Some people leave it really long. I'm sure we've all seen, right? The spiral or the very long peyot. Some people leave it shorter. We'll see soon the Code of Jewish Law defines it as extending near the ear, a little bit, you know, toward the edge of the ear, by the jawbone. We'll see that inside in a text or two. But the point is, the Rebbe is quoting his father-in-law saying that the message of the Upsharonish is training a child in Jewish ways. So number one, with the peyot, you have the side locks. Number two, what else do you have? What does the previous Rebbe write in the letter? What else? Ah, the talit katan. You have the prayer, the small, the not the prayer shawl, the little undershirt with the fringes, the talit katan, and recite the morning blessings, grace after. So morning blessings, a few lines of blessings in the morning, the blessing after meal, and the Shema before bed. So very, very simple, few prayers a day, wear some Jewish uniform items, right? I see kippah is missing. I guess maybe the assumption is that kippah maybe is worn before that by some. Okay, but kippah is also usually introduced at that time or a little bit before that time. So the point is that this is a moment, it's a milestone in which the child is being introduced to kind of a Jewish way of being. Until now, until three, you know, it's a baby. The child's a younger child. You're not going to hit him so hard with the Jewish training. But now it's straight up boot camp. Now that's it. That's it. You know, we're going to pump you up. So this kid gets the uniform. He gets the peyote. He gets the haircut. He gets the full deal. He's learning to say some blessings and sing some prayers. And that's what's going on. Make sense?
How do they keep the peyote curly?
You just go like that.
You probably
they have to do that all the time.
I don't know. I've never curled myself. I don't know what I've thought, but I've
curling iron.
Is it straight up legit?
No,
absolutely.
No, there's no way it's natural. It's probably curling irons, right?
Yes. Yeah. It's not there anymore, but you could go by a barbershop and the guys would be doing it up.
Makes sense.
I just don't understand why the peyote, I mean, so I understand the haircut, but the peyote is a reminder.
Oh, perfect. I'm glad you asked. Oh, so what's the deal with the peyote? Why leave? What? Where does that come from? Text number 9. Adina Malka, text number 9. It comes from Leviticus.
You shall not round off the corner of your head, and you shall not destroy the edge of your ear.
Boom! It's a biblical commandment to not cut the edge of your head. Now, it doesn't mean literally cut off the edge of your head. Right. But no, it means the edge of your hair, and the way that is defined in Jewish thought understanding, and of course canonized in Jewish law in text 10, which we'll read in a moment, is to leave at least a little bit of the sideburns. I'm calling them sideburns. I don't know if that's the side locks, whatever it is, the sides that we're calling corners by the ear, to leave a little bit of hair over there and not cut it just straight all the way around. So the Torah says, don't cut it straight. Don't cut it straight across. And take off, you know, everything in just a bowl. What do you say?
Bowl cut.
You said bowl. A bowl cut. No bowl cut. But leave a little bit. So therefore, when a child turns 3, so you do a haircut. Why? To initiate them in a Jewish, in a sense, in a Jewish way of being. In wearing what they're wearing, getting the right haircut based on Torah, etc. Text number 10. Wait, who's David?
The corner of the head, the pharos, or the 2 points on the head where the scalp meets the jaw on the left and right side. Whether one shaves only the pharos or the entire head, including the pharos, one has transgressed the prohibition. The extent of the side lock is from parallel to the hairline on the forehead up to below the ear, where the jaw emerges and separates from the head. The entire breadth of that place must be left untouched.
So we got that?
No.
Right? So here's the easy answer. It's okay. This stuff right here. Right? It's right there. Yeah, it's from kind of like the hairline and down till like around the jaw. You feel that? You feel like the bone?
Yeah.
Over here until below that bone. So it's kind of like by toward the bottom of the ear. So that's it. So leave a little bit. That's it. That's the
Somebody has to ask the question. Why don't Chabad?
Oh, why don't we have the whole? Yeah. So look, according to the code of Jewish law, it doesn't have to go so far. But since it's a biblical mitzvah, so some, especially Hasidic groups, want to emphasize the mitzvah of keeping that and make it very much apparent that that's not being cut. And so therefore it's become something to grow out and to kind of celebrate. Why Chabad doesn't specifically do that, I don't know. It just wasn't part of that Hasidic tradition. So it still follows the Shulchan Aruch, right? It doesn't say you have to grow it indefinitely long and curl it, right? It doesn't say that. But it's understood why some want to do that, to celebrate that, if you will. But Chabad doesn't. I know I'm not answering your question. The question is why. I don't know. I guess it's not part of the tradition. I would liken it to various, you look at various Jewish groups, Hasidic groups, and they have different types of levush, different garment, different styles of dress. You know, some wear long jackets, some wear short jackets, some wear this type of hat, that type of hat. You know, all sort of different types of different
ones.
Some wear the socks on the outside, some wear socks on the inside. Yeah, yeah. Who knows? I mean, there's so many different variations.
Like
yeah, and other groups as well. Yeah.
You can only cut it with a certain instrument and not with others, right? Your hair.
The Torah also prohibits putting a straight razor to the face.
Right.
So yeah, that would be another element. But let's focus, yeah.
It says you can't trim the sides of your beard.
It says destroy the edge of your beard.
Yeah.
Don't destroy the edge of the beard. In other places in Torah, it's defined as using like a straight blade, which is why some say that if you have an electric thing, it's there are different, let's leave the beard for another class. Right, that's another class. Let's talk about, that's for the hipster class. We'll talk about that. We'll leave that for another time. Let's focus on the peyos. So therefore, this explanation of the upsharner says when a child turns 3, you want them to kind of be initiated into the Jewish way of appearance And so you give him a haircut, but you leave that, you leave a little hair over there, and you're like, you see, that's the Jewish uniform. That's the way to look. Okay, so that's this idea. Take a look at text number, no, we're going to skip 11. We're going to skip number 11. Let's move on to text Let's look at text number 12. Text 12.
The maiden of Zion, her sons are marked by circumcision, by their hairstyle, namely beard and peyote, and by their tzitzit.
So this is an explanation from the Midrash on a verse in the book of Eicha, the book of Lamentations. And on the verse that talks about the maiden of Zion, so the Midrash says that her sons, Zion's sons, are marked by, or the maiden of Zion's sons are marked by, no, there's Jewish children are marked by circumcision, the boys, Brit Milah, by their hairstyle, and by their tzitzit. And hairstyle, according to the commentaries, the Manu Kohuna on the Midrash, says the beard and the peyo. Text number 13, I'll read this one as well. Again, this is all to kind of support the notion that leaving the peyo is initiating the child into kind of a Jewish appearance, a Jewish look. First things first, it says in text 13, the force of evil, the Yetzer Hara, will tempt him to remove from his face his Jewish appearance. That is, to remove his peyote and beard, the signs by which he is externally recognized as a Jew, with scissors. Text 14 is another text about this, along the similar theme. Ray, we're back to you.
The reason for the custom not to cut a boy's hair until he begins to speak. I have heard that this is also the time when we educate him about the mitzvot and leave him peyot, which make him recognizable in the eyes of the world as a Jewish child.
There we go. So clearly this is associated with having a specific Jewish look for the child, not to cut that part of the hair. And so we initiate the child into that look at the age of three. Until then, you know, it's there. It's just growing. You can't tell. Who knows? At the age of three, now you're wearing the Jewish uniform. You have the kippah, the tzitzit, the side locks. You're good to go. Right? You're three. You're looking the part. That's a basic understanding, a very pragmatic, if you will, understanding of the Upsharnish custom. So why cut the hair at age three? It's not about cutting the hair as much as it is about cutting it and leaving what you're leaving. So it's the payout. So it's like, it's the contrast, which is why you're doing it. Does that make sense? It's not about the rest of the hair almost as much as it's about cutting that, but leaving the payout. Let's look at another significant explanation for all of this. And it's this explanation will tell us that it's not just about looking Jewish. It's also about denying idolatry. Listen to this. Keeping peyot is denying idolatry. Let's see how that plays out. Text number 15. Jillian, we're back to you. Text 15. This is coming from Sefer HaKinah.
Do not round off the corner of the head as it is stated. You shall not round off the corner of your head. The sages explain that a Jew is not allowed to shave and style his hair similar to the idolaters and their priests of today. The reason for this commandment is to distance ourselves from any matter of idolatry and anything that is done for its sake, to make it forgotten from between our eyes and from all our actions. The warning comes explicitly about a thing that people do on their bodies, since it is a perpetual reminder of iniquity, as it is something that is fixed in the body.
The Sefer HaChinuch, the Chinuch is a book, it's a Sefer, it's a Jewish book that explains a very simple, not too simple, but a simple philosophical basic explanation of every single mitzvah in the Torah. Each one of the 613 mitzvot has a logical reason explained in Sefer HaChinuch. So in Sefer HaChinuch, he explains what is the prohibition about cutting off the corners of the hair. Like, who cares? What's the Torah has to get involved in our haircut now? It's like, to such an extent. So he explains, it's because that way of getting a haircut and cutting off the sides, that was the way that idolaters would cut their hair. So idol worshippers would cut their hair like that. So therefore, to not look like the idolaters, because it's something that's marked in the body, in the appearance, even if you're not worshiping an idol, but if you look like one of the idolaters or their priests, it's also not a good look. So the Torah says, don't cut that side of the hair, because that's something that idol worshippers would do. I know your question. What's your question? Why did the idol worshippers, I'm telling you your question, help me out here, guys. Why did the idol worshippers cut their hair? We just said that don't cut your hair like the idol worshippers who cut off the sides. Why did the idol worshippers do that in the first place? Yes? You with me on your question that I just asked? Okay, hold on 1 second. Let's take a half a step back. So the Chinuch says, Sefer Chinuch writes, why is it that the Torah says not to cut the sides of the hair? Because that's the look of idol worshippers. My question now is, why was that the look of the idol worshippers? Why did they decide to cut that part of the hair? I know it's a question on a hairstyle, but it's a question. The reason why I'm asking the question is because in text number 16, Rabbi Moshe Sofer, known as the Chatam Sofer, so he writes an unbelievable explanation for why the idol worshippers cut the sides of the hair. Take a look at text number 16, Mike.
I would like to suggest a reason for the ban on cutting the veil. Based on what Rambam writes in Guide for the Perplexed, that the logic is that such fashion was common among idolatrous priests. Now, we do not need to find a reason for any of the Torah's commandments, inasmuch as the Torah is a sealed treasure, and we follow it purely because God commanded it so.
However, even though we shouldn't need to give explanations,
we must still explain the thought process of the foolish idolatrous priests. Why did they shave their entire heads? What need was there for that?
The implication, by the way, is that not only did they cut the sides, but they shaved their entire heads, including the sides. So the Torah says, when you cut your hair, at least leave some of the sides. Continue.
Observe the astonishing line of reasoning. Those who worship graven images concocted all sorts of methods to make their idols look like human beings. They were successful in many ways, but they were entirely unable to recreate the true appearance of hair on their idols. They were only able to attach shorn human hair to their idols. To actually grow new hair from the idol is simply impossible. So, in order to honor their idols, the idolatrous priests took the opposite approach. They shaved their own heads entirely, including the peyote area, to appear visibly similar to their idol.
Anybody ever see Mr. Clean?
Yep.
Right? Anybody see the Oscars? Right? The Oscar dude?
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yeah? Bolt. Right? Mr. Clean? Mr. Oscar? Straight up. So the Chasam Sofer, the Chatam Sofer says, he writes, that why did the idolatrous priests, why did they shave their heads? It's because they wanted to look like their idols that they created. And just like the idols that they created didn't have hair, because go put hair in an idol. He says, go put hair in an idol. It's not going to grow, he tells us. It's like, yeah. idol. Or something, right? I feel like the clapper and Shia should come back in just an incredible conglomerate or something of 80s commercials. So let's get back to this point. The idols could not grow hair. The idols didn't have hair. So the priests of Avodah Zarah, of idolatry, they also, to look like their idols, they also shave their heads. The Torah says, don't look like them. Don't cut your hair. Don't shave your heads. Even if you're cutting your hair short, leave the peyote. Don't touch that part. At least there should be some distinction when we look at you. Some distinction. Ah, you're Jewish. You're not an idol worshiper. Make sense? So when we do the upshernish, we're declaring that our children are not idol worshippers. Mazel tov. It's good. Age 3, my kid is still not serving idols. So that is an allegorical understanding. It's not like a simple, straightforward idea, but it's an allegorical understanding of why it is that the peyot are important, and in turn, what is the significance of the apsharnish when we cut the rest of the hair, perhaps very short, and leave the peyot? Let's talk about now a psychological explanation. We're gonna have four explanations tonight. We had the basic explanation, the allegorical explanation, we're about to have the psychological explanation, and then we're gonna have the Kabbalistic explanation. So let me just recap, because we did two out of four. But I didn't tell you that we're dividing into four until now, so let me just go back and tell you the four. So number one, the basic explanation is you're training a child to look Jewish. It's a Jewish way of appearance, Jewish uniform, the clothing, the hair, the blessings. You're in the game. You're three. Here's what you're doing. So that's number one. That's the basic explanation. The allegorical explanation, the allusion, if you will, is that not only is this a Jewish way of looking, but it also, in a sense, denounces idolatry. Because the idol worshippers would cut off all the hair and the peyote. So we don't, and this initiates the child into rejecting idolatry as well. It hints or alludes to that, even if the child is not aware of that and doesn't necessarily associate that in the mirror, but that's a deeper explanation. There's a simple, also psychological explanation shared by Rabbi Isaac Schrey in text number 17. Who are we up to? Mike is passing. Oh, did you just read?
I read. I can read again.
No. If you read, pass. All right. Sorry, take it away.
To explain the matter in a straightforward way, so that even a pragmatist will understand it. When a child reaches 3 years old, it is a period in their life when it is vital to habituate them to performing mitzvahs. That is, just as our father Abraham recognized his creator at 3 years old, so too is fitting to end every child's Torah education when they reach the age of three. Inasmuch as we want the child to feel the importance of these new steps in his education, we must do it in a way that, even according to his small understanding, he realizes something has changed. He's reached the remarkable age of 3 years old. We make a big deal even when it comes to older children. For example, when they reach an age that they can serve as a kohen in the temple, etc. Certainly we should do so with a small child. We must make a big deal out of this milestone in their lives. Something that will leave an impression and demonstrate to them that until now they were babies, not yet learning mitzvot, and now they have matured and left that category. How do we accomplish this? The best way is to take their hair, which has grown long until now, like all their young friends, and cut it off so that the child comes to realize that he is no longer a baby. This in turn helps with several aspects of his education, in which we may now tell him, you need to do such and such, you aren't a baby anymore. Or, for a big child like you, it's not proper not to say this blessing. You're not a baby like that toddler, etc. These words will be accepted by the child and understood at his level.
I will tell you that I've seen it work. Straight up. I've seen this in action. First of all, I can show you after the class some before and after pictures from the upsharnish for my kids. My sons, what they looked like the day before the haircut, and what they looked like after their first haircut, mm-hmm. And they look so much more mature. Mm-hmm. They look like a big boy. And you look at them differently. When I say you, I looked at my sons differently after the haircut. Yeah. They just look different. It's like, I think in life sometimes we get stuck in kind of like a gradual pattern where just every day just leads into the next, and you know, just what you did yesterday is good enough for today, and what you did today is good enough for tomorrow. The point here is at age three, it's a milestone, and we want to make a big distinction for the child. We want to make it a big, like something very new and something very big. And so one way to do that is by letting the hair grow out until three, and then at three, cutting the hair, and then you look at them differently. You're gonna speak to them and act toward them in a much more mature way, or in a more mature way. And the kicker is they look at themselves, they look at them in the mirror, and they see a different kid. And you can tell them, you're not a baby, like, literally, you're not a baby anymore, you're a big boy. Now you can do this mitzvah.
It might be good for the parents too to look at their little one and see the long hair and just say, you know, he's just a baby, don't
worry. Yeah.
He's just a little one.
Yeah, it's good for the child psychologically. And I mentioned, for me, I can speak for myself, psychologically, it's good for the parents that you look at them differently. And so you say, yes, they can take on more things. They can learn more things. They can be responsible for more things now that they're three. And part of that is because of the haircut. So this adds another layer to it. It's not just having a Jewish appearance or denouncing idolatry in some sort of, you know, allegorical way, but it's a psychological technique of highlighting the maturation that's happening for the parent and the child.
Don't some people put the alphabet on something and put honey?
Yes. There's also a custom at three to bring the child to the cheder, to the school, to the Jewish school. And traditionally, the teacher at the cheder has a sheet of the alphabet and puts honey on each of the letters, drop of honey in the letters. Mm-hmm. And the child traces their finger on the letters or touches each one and licks the honey. And the message is Torah is sweet. Torah is sweet. It's good to study. Judaism is sweet. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. That's another custom that's associated with the age of three. The haircut, though, can help a child feel more mature and the parent relate to the child with more maturity. So that's number three. Yeah.
I just wanted to say, too, I don't know psychologically if you may know, but at age three, because I'm just thinking of my granddaughter, she became incredibly conscious of her own reflection in the mirror at age three. As she would walk by, she would really notice herself. So I just wonder if there's, you know, again, like in so many things in Judaism, this brilliance that associates with a child's own perception of self.
I would say that it is around the age of three that a child begins to realize that that's them and not some other kid, in the glass. It's like, oh, they look like a nice person to play with, huh? Why do they keep on touching me? Why are they copying me? Right. So at age, it is maybe a little bit before, maybe a little bit afterwards. I think Reva already is. She's noticing. She kind of notices that. Does she know that it's her? I mean, we tell her that it's her. Would she know on her own that it's her? I think so. I want to say yes, but it's definitely close in and around the age of three that becomes a possibility. And you're right. The child can look at themselves and say, I'm different than I was.
But the haircut is Talmudic, right? I mean, it's a rabbinic.
It's not even rabbinic. It's a custom.
It's
not even. So when we say things are rabbinic, it means a rabbinic enactment. It's like a mitzvah. You have to do this rabbinically mandated. It's not even rabbinically mandated. It's just a custom.
Just a custom.
And I don't mean just a custom negate it.
Yeah.
But I mean it's.
It's not halakha.
Look, it says Minhag Yisrael Torahi. The custom amongst Jews becomes like Torah, and many customs are in a sense. It's hard to say this, you know, on mic and on camera. Many customs sometimes are more revered than Torah law itself. Because it's almost like, I'll give you a quick example about a minhag, about the power of minhagim, about the power of customs. It's kind of, a custom means God never told us to do this. And the rabbis never said, you have to do this. It's we on our own said, you know what? Let's do this for God. Let's do this. God wants it. The difference is certain things your spouse tells you, you have to do. Certain things your society tells you, you have to do. So if your spouse tells you, can you go take out the garbage, and you take out the garbage, how significant is that? You were told to do it. Of course you should do it. It's the stuff that you come up on your own that demonstrates your love. Are you with me? It's when you come up with something on your own and you say, you know what? You didn't tell me. You didn't ask. You didn't even hint, because rabbinic things are hinted. So it's kind of like, no, I didn't tell you to take out the garbage, but it smells in here, right? So then the husband gets the hint to take out the garbage. So that's also, in a sense, coming kind of top down. It doesn't demonstrate the attentiveness of the spouse. Whereas a custom or something self-generated expresses the attentiveness of the party toward the other. So in a sense, a custom means, God, we love you so much. You didn't ask. You didn't hint. But we know what you want. We're going to give you a first haircut celebration at age three. The kippah is also a custom. Maybe a little bit more than a custom, but it originates certainly as a custom. You have one of the more famous customs that's done in synagogues around the world is the notion of dancing with the Torahs on Simchat Torah. That is purely a custom. It is not rabbinically mandated. There are many mitzvot that are rabbinically mandated. Lighting the menorah on Hanukkah is rabbinic. It's not biblical because it happened later. So there are many things that we do that are rabbinically mandated. But like dancing with Torah, hakafot on Simchat Torah, dancing around Shmini Atzeret Simchat Torah, that is complete custom. And there's a joy in the hakafot that you don't have with other mitzvot. And the joy is born of a person saying, God, I love you. I'm doing this for you. So it's coming from us, self-generated. There's only so much joy you can have when you're being told to do something. Uh-huh. It's like you're kind of responding to do it. You're being obedient, which is good. Uh-huh. But that joy comes from almost self-generated things. Let's talk about the last piece of it. This is really where the whole thing comes together. And this is really where we knock it out of the park. What is the Kabbalah of the peyot? What is the Kabbalah of a haircut? What is the Kabbalah of hair? I'm glad you asked. So, Karen, are we up to you?
Yes.
Well, I'm going to give you the honor of reading a mystical text about hair that may...
This is hair.
Yeah, this is from the Arizal. Straight up. From the wisdom of the Arizal. Text number 18. I don't know what page it's on. Text 18.
Not a great number.
Chai, yes. Karen, good luck with this reading.
I
see. You can read the words, but I'm saying like the understand.
I see a word already that I just want to know. Is that on pin or on pin?
On pin.
On pin.
Yeah.
Sit here on pin. Okay.
Yeah. You ready? But after you read it, I'm going to ask you to explain it.
Oh, God.
I'm kidding. I'll explain it.
All right. Every time one fulfills a divine commandment, one should not be satisfied with action alone, but should perform it with the correct intention to fulfill the commandment his creator has given him. Okay, so far. Okay.
So far, so good.
So, yeah. In the case of peyote, while the hair is being cut, one ought to turn their mind to the fact that they do not have permission to cut their peyote on each side, nor to cut the corners of their beard. A person should realize when their hair is cut that their head is like Zair on pin, the divine emotive qualities, and that all the severities of their judgments are being removed. However, it is known that the head is comprised of all 10 divine spherot, or modes of divine expression, and the malchut, the majesty of the head, is at the peyot. Therefore, the Hebrew word peah, the singular form of peyot, has the same numerical value of Elohim, the divine name associated with, or Elohim, the divine name associated with Malkut. However, the world is only sustained by severity, and they should not be entirely removed. And therefore, in Malkut alone, we must leave over some of the severities at the resha, or head, of Se'er Anken.
Please explain. I'm going to tell you in short what this means. This is straight up Lurianic Kabbalah. If anyone ever asks you, so you study Kabbalah? Sure. What kind? Lurianic Kabbalah. About what? About hair. Here is the basic explanation. You guys ready? The hair is synonymous with Gevura. What is Gevura? It can mean strength, but it also means severity and limitation. So Chesed is expansion or giving. Gevura is withholding, contraction. Expansion is Chesed. Contraction is Gevura. So if the energy is broad and wide in Chesed, in Gevura it's narrowed down. We find this to be true with hair. Why do you feel your finger being cut, but not your hair? Kabbalah asks this question. Why is it that you can get a haircut and you're not screaming in pain, but if somebody gave you a finger cut, God forbid, or you got a paper cut, it hurts like crazy? What's the answer? Is the hair not alive? Like the finger, of course, it's alive. It grows, it's alive, but it's not alive in the same way. You see, the finger is alive, the toe is alive, the leg is alive, the head is alive in one way, the hair in a different way. The hair, the life force flowing through hair is narrow, smaller. It's less of the energy, the feeling of the soul in the hair. That's why you can cut it and you don't feel it. In other words, there's more life force of the soul flowing through the rest of the body which is why you feel it more acutely when you touch it, pinch it, poke it, cut it, God forbid, right? As opposed to the hair. The hair you can cut and you don't feel it because the life force, the energy, the vitality of the soul that's flowing through the hair has been reduced. So therefore, it is synonymous with tzimtzum, contraction, and gevura. Are you with me? Does this make sense so far? Again, chesed is expansion of energy. Gevura is contraction of energy, limitation of energy. There's a limitation of the energy in the hair, which is why you don't feel it when it's being cut. It's limited in the hair. Make sense so far? Good. Therefore, it's a good thing to cut the hair. Why? Because it means, on a cosmic level, that you're eliminating the bottleneck of blessings in your life. You see, divine blessings also have two modalities, expansion and contraction. And on a divine level, when the blessings flow from on high, what would you rather have? Where would you rather receive from? God's open hand of chesed or God's maybe reduced hand of gevura? It's how you make a fist. Also, gevura means might. You make a fist by contraction. So which would you rather have? God's open blessings of expansion or reduced blessings of contraction? Which one? Open hands, obviously, right? So he says, when you're cutting your hair, meditate, have the kavana, have the intention that you are eliminating the gevurot. You're eliminating any, you know, on pipes, you have things that sometimes reduce the pressure, reduce, like, whether it's water. Huh?
The valves?
Valves, it kind of like, I remember once we were having a problem with our internet, Comcast came out, and they put something on the line that reduced, it was too much bandwidth. I'm sure they were making this up, but whatever. Too much bandwidth coming through, we have to reduce it, and that's going to make it better. Whatever. So here's the question. Forget the question, because I asked the question and you already gave me the answer. You'd rather not have the reduced blessings, you'd rather have the full blessings. Therefore, when you cut your hair, the meditation is, this is reducing, on a cosmic level, those blockages, those reductions that limit the flow of divine energy and vitality, and now I have access to the full energy. So I'm eliminating gevura from my life and from my divine, from my cosmic life as well. But here's the kicker. Can you totally eliminate gevura in your life?
No.
No.
This is part of God.
Well, text 18 at the end, what the Karen read. However, the world is only sustained by severity. And you need sometimes gevura. Although, in general, we cut the hair, we want to eliminate gevura, not all the way. You need a little bit of gevura. You and I, we need a little bit of gevura in our lives, and we need to practice and live with gevura also. What is gevura? Gevura is contraction. Gevura is basically saying no. Chesed is saying yes, and we want God to say yes to us, but in our lives, we can't cut all the hair. You have to leave a little bit on the mouthfoot level, toward the edge. On a very pragmatic level, you have to maintain the ability to say no. Not everything is all good, right? This is not, it's all good, what everything goes, expansion, you know, free-flowing energy, love, and everything. That's not the way life works. You have to have a little bit of gevura, inner strength, to sometimes say, no, this is not good for me. This is not okay. In other words, gevura is, chesed is the power to say yes and to give or to take. Gevura is the power to say no, to withhold, to draw back. So in general, we want to cut out, we'd rather have chesed than gevura, but you can't totally eliminate the gevura. So when we cut the hair, but we leave the peyot. And what's the message? What's the meditation? We want blessings from on high, but we remember that we have a responsibility to still maintain the ability to say no.
So two questions. Is there a bracha for a haircut?
No.
And why then is there a prohibition against not trimming the beard to get rid of
the beard, it says, is the emanation of the 13 attributes of divine mercy. So the beard has 13 parts. I can show you where they are. We can use yours as a case study. I'm kidding. I don't know exactly what the 13 are, but it says there are 13 sections of the beard. It says the Arizal. was able to point out the 13 sections of, and you can see, I think I heard about the Ariza, you could see how it was, it kind of grouped together in 13 somehow groupings in his beard. But that's why Kabbalistically we try not to touch the beard too much, so that, or at all, to preserve that flow of divine kindness with the facial hair. But the hair on the top of the head represents gevura. We want to eliminate gevura. We rather have chesed, but you have to maintain a little bit of gevura at the same time. And now we can understand not only what a haircut is, not only what hair is, gevura, not only what a haircut is, getting rid of gevura, not only what peyot are, which is maintaining, reserving the right to say no when it's healthy to say no. Sometimes you don't give a child everything that he or she wants. You don't give a child a knife. Sometimes you can't say yes. Hey, you want to join me for this, that, or the other? I'm sorry, I can't. Got to go to shul, right? Sometimes saying no is a good thing. So we keep the payout to reserve the right to say no. And that's why, on a deeper level, on a mystical level, when a child turns 3, we educate the child by cutting their hair and leaving the payout. We teach a child that you are now old enough to appreciate the no's that you're going to hear. Not everything is going to be a yes in childhood. Not every time that you want something, you want to eat something, you want to do something, right? Not every time is it going to be a yes. Is it healthy? Oftentimes it's a no. And for children, of course, the no is famously very difficult, right? A no is very difficult. So what we do with a child is we highlight the no. We cut the hair, take off the gevura and say, oh, on a mystical level. I don't know if anybody ever explained this to their child, 3-year-old child. I'm not suggesting you could try, but your mileage may vary. But the message to the child, at least on a spiritual level, on an energy level, is maintaining the gevura, maintaining the no. There's value in the no. This message is not just for kids. Of course, it's a message for us. And the message for us is as follows. The message for us is, in our lives, not everything goes. Not everything goes. Certain things are off limits. Certain things shouldn't be okay. And certain things are not okay. And so even as we live kind, generous, loving, open lives, and we should, Olam Chesed Yibane, God built his world on Chesed. Some built this city on rock and roll. God built his world on Chesed, kindness. Even notwithstanding that truth, we have to also have the ability to sometimes just say no. Thank you very much for joining me tonight for Torah Studies.
This is the word to stand on 3 things.